Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So one of the more disgraceful things I saw over the weekend, and again, you go to Brooklyn Center, Minnesota, where the another senseless shooting of an unarmed black man happened by a veteran policewoman who you would think would know better, would know the difference between a taser and a handgun. Again, this is just one of those bizarre moments, a video on Twitter of the American flag and a blue line flag that the police had kind of raised up. And, you know, people were saying it's kind of like the Brooklyn Center Police there in Minnesota, where that's like their Alamo. They've raised their flag. And you go, is this the right thing to do at this moment? I think not. Here to share some thoughts on where we are, I've asked our good friend Will Bunch to come back and talk with us. Will is a national columnist for the Philadelphia Inquirer. He's got a new piece out from Minnesota to Philadelphia. Cops, troops, flood the zone, violate our rights, and make us less safe. Will, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick. Hey, thanks for having me.
So did you see that? You saw this flag. You saw this being flying in the breeze. What were your thoughts when you saw that?
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the things that really inspired me to write this column, because, I really couldn't put it any better than you just did. It is an Alamo type situation. I mean, I feel that, you know, this American way of policing, which is so imbued with systematic racism, you know, the thing that we've been talking about ever since George Floyd was killed 10 months ago. I feel like this police state is kind of making its last stand here, or not its last stand, because they might win, you know, but I do feel like, I think a lot of people felt after the protests, after George Floyd was killed, that we could go in a couple different directions. We could maybe possibly see a radical reform of the police, you know, probably not abolishing the police, but making it more public safety, making it more community oriented, you know, setting up scenarios where when somebody's having a mental health crisis, they send a mental health worker and not an armed police officer. Same with these traffic stops, you know, do what they're doing in Berkeley and a couple other cities where you have civilians making these traffic stops who, again, who aren't carrying guns and aren't, you know, escalating the confrontation. I mean, that was one direction we could have gone, or we could go the direction that we seem to be going, which is the police and their unions. This officer who shot and killed Dante Wright in Brooklyn Center was also the head of the police union, you know? And, you know, to me, the fact that they raised this thin blue line flag over their station house said everything. And then ever since then, what have you seen on the ground there? I mean, you've seen these phalanxes of troops, you know, behind this fence, firing projectiles at protesters. Every night, reporters have been roughed up. We have video of reporters being pepper sprayed. Reporters are being dragged out of their cars. A producer for CNN, who happened to be an Asian American woman, was arrested by a cop who screamed at her, "Do you speak English?" even though that's her primary language. I mean, and look, I'm not, even though I'm a journalist myself, I'm not one of those guys who only gets upset when it's journalists are being abused, but I think the bigger picture here, and why I do make a big deal when journalists get abused like this, is because if this is the way that the police are treating people wearing press vests or with press badges around their neck, imagine what they're doing to everyday citizens.
Exactly.
When there's not a camera present.
No, imagine, you know, without all of this attention, this is what they're doing with the world's eye on them. Imagine what they do when nobody's paying attention. You're absolutely right.
Right. A guy's pointing a camera at them and they're, you know, putting them on the ground and roughing them up or arresting a couple of these people. If they're doing that to the press, you know, they're doing worse and they are, you know, I mean, there was a remarkable picture out of Brooklyn Center where, there's a church near the scene of the protests where some of the protesters have been taking sanctuary. I mean, that's a tradition in this country. Churches are sanctuary.
Not just in this country, but globally.
Well, yeah, right. Yeah, not just a good point. But, you know, I mean, it's come up a lot in the whole immigration fight with undocumented immigrants taking sanctuary in these churches. Anyway, when protesters started using this church for a sanctuary, you saw this incredible scene of 75 heavily armed, you know, robocops, I don't know what else to call them, forming a phalanx around this church so that people couldn't get in. I mean, that's the level of policing we're seeing here. And, you know, and what scares me, Rick, with this verdict coming down, you know, maybe midweek, maybe the weekend, who knows what's going to happen. But we're seeing in so many cities across the country that they are gearing up for kind of a armed occupation type scenario. Yeah. You know, I know in Philadelphia where I am, they've already activated 1,000 National Guard officers for Philadelphia. I mean, this reminds me of that movie. If you remember that movie Minority Report, where they had the Department of Pre-Crime, yeah, yeah. You know, they're calling up the National Guard for a case where the verdict hasn't come down yet. I mean,
yeah, but Will, you got to go. You know, if we've learned from the past, and from the past we've learned that these police officers get off, and there could be chaos. Because I've been struggling with this one myself.
Yeah.
If I'm Governor Wolf, am I derelict for not preparing for what could be the worst and maybe doing it a softer way? Or do I go out with, you know, with the shock troops, with the tanks and all of that stuff? That's a tough call.
Yeah, it is. No, and you're right. You're right. Absolutely right. And, you know, actually, it's funny. I'm on the editorial board of the Inquirer with one or two other columnists and with the people who write the editorials. And we had our big weekly meeting today, and we talked about this for a long time, you know, about what's our position about the National Guard. And it is a tough one because, you know, you don't want to see, I don't think any of us really wants to see small business owners, especially a lot of these small business owners are Black and brown people themselves. I mean, we don't want to see them get hurt by, you know, indiscriminate, you know, vandalism or looting or whatever. I mean, there's a need for some level of security. What I would say about that, though, is, I mean, here in Philadelphia, I can't speak so much for other cities, but in Philadelphia, we had a good run of about 6 or 7 years where they were really getting that balance right most of the time. And what they were doing was they had an active civil affairs unit that would respond to these protests. But they wouldn't show up in riot gear. They were mostly bicycle officers. They would show up in, you know, regular uniforms, not the vests, not the helmets, not the batons. And you know, they had a commander who was really good, and they tried to respect people's First Amendment rights. You know, obviously they enforced the law if necessary, but that system worked really well. I don't know if you remember the 2016 DNC that happened in Philadelphia. There were a lot of protests, as you know. Some of them had the potential to go bad, and they didn't because the police did a good job handling that. So it can be, it's a tightrope, but you can walk on that high wire. You know, you can balance, you know, protecting the property of law-abiding citizens but also respecting people's First Amendment rights.
It's an excellent point that you make about the visual de-escalation. I think, you know, by having what you're expecting to be a riot, and you put these people, even the I would think the people in them are ready for to start cracking heads. So it's a completely different dynamic. I think you're spot on that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, I'm sure you've heard, and I'm sure a lot of listeners have heard the chant at some of these protests when the people say, you know, why are you wearing riot gear? We don't see no riot here. You know, is a chant that demonstrators use. And the thing is, people who, you know, been to or covered these type of events know that when police respond in riot gear, it's almost inviting a riot on some degree. And the thing, I mean, and you know, and you tell this, you know, obviously as a journalist, I have to interact with, you know, these conservative people responding to what I write all the time. And, you know, they don't get it. You know, they, you tell them that and they think you're crazy, but it, it's, you know, people have studied this and it's true. You know, the level of police response on some level determines how the public responds, you
And I would
know.
argue that that's not just on the group scale. That's down to the individual. You know, and I look at the murder of George Floyd. That could have gone completely differently from what the videos that we saw with people who were trained better in de-escalating that situation. That
Right.
should have never gotten to the point that where it got right from the start. And I would take that, you know, you multiply that to crowd size, the same thing. It's all about de-escalating. It shouldn't be about you're going to do what I say one way or another. I demand because it turns out
Yeah,
bad.
you know, and the cities across the country, there have been some cities, I believe Los Angeles is one that gets held up as an example of where they've really put a heavy emphasis on this de-escalation training for officers, and they've seen some good results. I mean, my theory when it comes to police is, I mean, honestly, I would like to see what they proposed in Minneapolis that they ended up not doing. I would like to see that tried in a few cities where you basically, I mean, you're not abolishing policing per se, but what you're doing is you're replacing the police as we know them with like a new kind of Department of Public Safety, and you know, where you're really doing serious community policing, where that you're hiring people from the community, they're living in the communities, they're not an occupying army, you
We
know,
take their
and you make
tanks
these other,
away.
yeah, and you make these other changes that I mentioned a moment ago, you know, where situations that don't require an armed intervention don't get an armed intervention. So, you know, how many, you know, when you analyze these scenarios that go bad and end up in a police officer shooting an unarmed person, or, you know, these situations that go bad, I mean, the two leading causes that I see all the time in the worst cases are traffic stops and mental health crises when they respond, you know, or drug overdoses, I guess, which is kind of a subset of mental
Right.
health crises. Like,
No, and those could be those, you're right, could be handled much differently. So
yeah.
let me ask you this, because you know, one of the things that has to happen is we have to, I think, look how differently at how we police. And I've said from the beginning, I support the police. I don't support defunding them. I don't support abolishing them. I support them when they're not wrong. When they do the right thing, I support them, but we've also got
Yeah.
to use them in a different way. Because here in Pennsylvania, back when they closed down the state mental health hospitals, basically law enforcement had to pick all of that up. And we've been
Right.
using our jails as mental health facilities for way too long. So investing in that again, I think could be helpful.
Yeah, and as you're suggesting, I mean, the police don't even want this role, right? I
No.
mean, you know, I mean, it's just a bad situation, and it's bad government. It's bad, you know, it's bad policy. And yeah, you know, I mean, when it comes to abolishing the police, right? I mean, if you live in a neighborhood and, you know, some people in your neighborhood get murdered, you want somebody investigating those crimes and finding out who did it, you know? And, you know, whether we call them the police or whether we call them the Department of Public Safety, I mean, obviously you need officers, you know, with training to help keep the public safe on a certain level. It's just we need to get it right, you know? I mean, for the last 40 years or so in this country, we've gone the occupying army approach too much, you know, with these things like stop and frisk, for example, you know, or these traffic stops that are pretexts, you know, but by which I mean, you know, when somebody gets pulled over because they have the tree air freshener dangling down from their front view mirror, and it's just an excuse for the cops to try and find guns or try and find, you know, and they've studied this, and you know, these stops are disproportionately of black and brown drivers, even though the truth is that they actually find contraband more often among white drivers, you know, but there's such a racial component to this. And these are the reforms we need to be taking. And you know, and it gets back and you know, the reason I wrote about Brooklyn Center is because it's typical of what we're seeing, where we're, instead of trying these reforms, you know, the police and their unions are raising their thin blue line flag and doing their kind of Fort Apache, the
Yeah.
Bronx, you know, last stand against these protesters, and It's really alarming as we go into the verdict in the Chauvin case.
Yeah, I'm really hoping that doesn't go the wrong way. Last question I've got for you, because we're talking about people and their First Amendment rights to protest and to seek redress of their grievances for their government. As we speak, there's anti-protest legislation banging around in a lot of states.
Yeah, I'm writing about this in my newsletter that goes out tomorrow about the bill that Ron DeSantis just signed in Florida, which he calls an anti-riot bill. I mean, they basically want to try and redefine peaceful protests as a riot. And, and Florida is doing this thing that you've seen in some of these other red states where they want to make sure that if you drive your car into a group of protesters, that you can't be held liable. I mean, that's just outrageous. I don't know if you or any of your listeners have seen the legislation that's been proposed up in Minnesota, of all places. It probably won't become law because they do have a Democratic governor, thank God. But there's a proposal in Minnesota that if you're a college student and you get arrested for civil disobedience during a protest, they could take away your student loan if this bill passes. To me, that's just unbelievable. But that's where we're at. That's where the Republican Party, rather they've given up on policy ideas, and they've given up on governing, and what they're trying to do basically is shut people up.
Yeah. Well, again, these are the same people who brought us your stand your ground laws, where if I start a fight with you and you beat me up, I get to shoot you.
So it's a trend. It's their philosophy, but it just doesn't jive with the First Amendment or the Constitution.
We definitely live in scary times. But, Will, I appreciate the time. I appreciate the work that you do. Great stuff, as always. Hope folks will take a look at the piece from Minnesota to Philly. Cops, troops, flood the zone, violate our rights, and make us less safe. Written by the great Will Bunch. We'll make sure we get links out on how you can check that out. Will, I appreciate the time, man.
Yeah, Rick, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Good stuff, as always. Let's take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.